It's been said that every quilt tells a story, and it's so true. But I also believe every quilter has a story to tell. I wanted to hear about the people behind these wonderful quilts and thought you'd enjoy hearing about their lives also. Welcome to A Quilter's Life. I had such a wonderful time at QuiltCon 2024 in Raleigh, North Carolina this past February. While there, I had the opportunity to meet several people that I have interviewed on A Quilter's Life in person, and also many others became new friends. Carrie Dale, the Executive Director of American Quilt Study Group, was in their booth when I walked in and introduced myself. I was so excited that she logged onto my website and signed up to be interviewed while I stood there chatting with her. Although Carrie hasn't made a quilt, she is surrounded by quilters and loves quilts. She is doing a great job keeping quilting stories alive. Thanks, Carrie, and everyone involved with the American Quilt Study Group for working so hard. Carrie, thanks for joining me on A Quilter's Life. So glad to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I got to meet you at QuiltCon this year. You were in the booth for American Quilt Study Group, and I take it that you are leading that group.
I'm one of the many leaders of the group. We are a nonprofit organization, so I do report to a board. Our president is Nancy Babore. And we have two vice presidents, Deb Dahab and Sharon Pinka, but I'm the executive director. So I kind of manage the day-to-day happenings, do a lot of outreach and a lot of marketing for American Quilt Study Group. And in QuiltCon, that was the first time that we had attended as a vendor with a booth. And our expectations were met and exceeded because we weren't really sure. American Quilt Study Group are known for the study of quilts and researching quilts. So people think that we just like antique quilts and vintage quilts, and that's not the case. We're interested in all quilts. And the way I look at it and the way that we're trying to communicate is that whatever happens today is history tomorrow. And so we're trying to expand our reach into all types of quilting worlds and interests and things. So it's been a real fun journey so far.
Oh, great. I'm excited to hear more about that in just a little bit here. But I'd like to jump back to your background. Share where you were born and raised.
Well, I'm a Nebraska girl, born and raised. I was born in Lincoln, and I live in Lincoln now. But my dad opened his own practice in Norfolk, Nebraska, when I was 10. So we moved to there. I graduated from high school there and then moved back here in 92. My parents moved back in 92. I moved back. So I've been here ever since. So yeah, just Nebraska, but I'm not a farmer. I don't own any cows. I don't own horses or any kind of farm animals. I live in a city. A lot of times people ask me, especially people that haven't been to Nebraska before, do you live on a farm and do you have animals? No, I have dogs and cats. That's it. So,
well, those are great animals to have, especially if you have to be in a city.
Yeah, I'm an animal person. I've rescued two chihuahuas. One, he has three legs, and he was 8 when I adopted him. And then little Muriel, who is 4 pounds. I adopted her, and we don't know how old she is. She was just found by a dumpster by the Humane Society. And my friend, he runs the Nebraska No Kill Canine Rescue, called me and said, I've got a dog here I think you might be interested in. Because I was on the foster list as an animal foster. He told me about her, and I said, well, what's her name? And he said, Muriel. And I said, no way. And he's like, what? And I said, that was my mom's name. My mom passed away in 2014, and he's like, get out. I thought, you know what? It's meant to be. Her name's Muriel. And so, yeah, she is a little sweetheart, teeny tiny and very high maintenance. In fact, you might hear them bark occasionally on this podcast, and it's pretty annoying.
They're small but mighty.
Oh, yeah. They think they're pretty tough. The funny thing is, they're so protective of me. But when I'm gone on business, they don't even care. Every time the door opens, they don't bark like they normally do. They're just good little dogs that just sit and wait for me to come home so they can bark some more. But I love them anyway.
Yeah, they're just doing their job and protecting you.
Yes. I don't know what they could do, a three-legged, 8-pound dog and a 4-pound dog. But, oh, well, they're mine.
Carrie, do you have a special childhood memory?
Oh, I have so many special childhood memories, but the most special ones, I think, involve my mom. My mom passed away in 2014. She was a music teacher. She was my music teacher. She was actually my dad's music teacher. She graduated from high school when she was 16 and went to college right away and got her master's degree very quickly and went and taught at Red Cloud High School in Red Cloud, Nebraska, which is the home of Willa Cather and the Willa Cather Museum. In fact, Leslie Levy, who is the executive director of the International Quilt Museum, used to work for the Willa Cather Foundation. But that's where my mom's first teaching job was, and my dad was a junior in high school. And it's like, oh my, she could have been arrested. She's like, I couldn't have got arrested. I didn't do anything wrong. And I'm like, okay. Actually, they started dating when he was a senior, and she went to the superintendent and said, I really like this guy. She's 4 years older than him. And so they started dating, and the superintendent said, he's a good kid. Just try to be discreet. You think about that now, and I'm like, yikes. But like she said, she wasn't doing anything illegal. I have 7 brothers and 2 sisters, and my parents were married for 60 some years. But like I said, most of my best memories come from my mom. And when I was small, I just remember she loved to sew, and she wasn't a quilter. She liked to sew clothes, and she sewed all of my clothes and my siblings' clothes and my sisters, mostly my sisters and mine. I remember sitting on the floor of her sewing room, and she would iron my dad's ties and his boxers and his shirts. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I would never do that. Sorry, honey, I would not iron your boxers or your ties or your shirts. But I would sit on the floor and we would listen to the Sound of Music soundtrack. And I just loved that soundtrack, and we would sing together. I was probably 3 or 4 years old. And it's funny because the night that I found out that she passed away, I was watching Sound of Music. So kind of bittersweet, but I just have all these great memories of my mom. And she had this button box. I know a lot of people have the same memory of grandparents or moms that had this button tin and all of the buttons. I used to love going through all the buttons and looking at the different buttons and asking where they came from and stuff. But yeah.
What a wonderful mother.
She was. She was great. And 10 kids. I can't even imagine. She was probably a little crazy too. I don't know how she did it.
My husband's one of 10 kids. So it is so much fun to have that many nieces and nephews. They just multiplied.
I know. I have 7 brothers and 2 sisters. And my 2 sisters were the oldest, and they're twins. And then there's 5 boys, and then me, and then 2 boys. So I wasn't exactly a girly girl growing up, and my mom could not. And, you know, I wish I would have learned how to sew, especially now. There was a reason I didn't want to learn those things. I wanted to go outside. I wanted to play. I wanted to run around. And I don't think I had the attention span to learn something, but it might have been good for me to do that. Just to be able to sit still and do something and focus on something instead of all over the place all the time. But yeah, the boys, they ran rampant in our family. My parents have 38 grandchildren, and 3 of them are girls. So you can imagine our family reunions are very testosterone-y, filled with boys. they tell me it's not too late to learn how to sew, but I'm not sure if that's the case with me. I really want to learn. Just being in this industry and learning all these things has just been incredible. And I have become kind of a quilt addict. I have purchased some. I just purchased one from Zania Cord that was in our auction. It's beautiful. Crimson red. It's just gorgeous. So maybe I might learn. I'm more patient as I get older. I've gotten so much more patient than I have been in the past. And so if anybody wants to teach me, anybody out there, I'm willing to learn.
I bet you'll get 100 calls.
Paula, if I learn how to quilt, I will send you a picture and let you know.
I'll expect to see it.
I may just be a collector for a while.
You grew up in Nebraska and you're still in Nebraska. Did you say you went away to school and came back?
Well, I went to grade school and high school in Norfolk. I went to college in Norfolk and for a couple years. And then I transferred to Lincoln. I went to Doane University in Lincoln and got my bachelor's and then went right through and got my master's. And at the time, I was married and had children when I got my degree. I waited to do that. So it's not something I recommend to have children and go to school and work full time all at once. But I did it. Got my master's degree. I have a master's degree in business from Doane. And I started out in state government and I worked for the Department of Labor. I was a job service interviewer. And then they changed the name of it to workforce development. I became a job service representative. And then I was a business services representative. I worked with companies in Lincoln trying to help them find employees. And then decided I wasn't making enough money and wasn't really being challenged. And I applied for a position at the Nebraska Medical Association, which is a nonprofit member organization for physicians. And so my position was the director of specialty societies and special projects. And it was very special. There were 10 physician specialty societies that I was the executive director for. So I had 10 different membership organizations that I worked for. And then I also did special projects for the Nebraska Medical Association. And so I was doing their annual meeting, their CME, which is the medical education, filing for that. It was like I was baptized by fire in the nonprofit world because that's where I learned most of my stuff about nonprofit organizations. I was there for about 7 or 8 years. And then I decided I want to make more money. And I became a construction sales person. We have a foundry here in Lincoln. Their parent company was in Neenah, Wisconsin, Neenah Foundry. And so I worked for them for about 5 years selling manholes and tree grates and curb inlets and stuff. The money was good, but I went back to nonprofit after that. And I've been with nonprofits since then. I was at the Alzheimer's Association before I got the position with American Quilt Study Group.
Oh, wow. I have to stand up here a second. I have on my Alzheimer's Walk shirt.
I saw that. I'm like, walk. And it's purple. Oh, my grandkids think of me as purple because I was wearing purple all the time when I worked. I was a development director for them. It was a good time. But yeah. Again, not a lot of money in the Alzheimer's Association nonprofit world. So
being in the quilt world, have you heard of Ashley Montgomery? She has Quilt to End ALZ.
Actually, I don't remember Ashley Montgomery, the name, but I do remember hearing about Quilt to End ALZ. Does she have quilting? Is it for a longest day event or does she do?
She does a longest day event, but she has things going on throughout the year too.
Awesome. Good for her. It's a really great cause. And considering what are they thinking by 2050, it's going to cost, the healthcare costs for Alzheimer's is going to be in the trillions. So it's not going anywhere anytime soon. So if you can donate or walk, participate in a walk, it's a really great experience.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else about your family that you wanted to share?
Like I said, I come from a huge family. I have 5 sons and 8 grandchildren. I do have 3 granddaughters, so I'm kind of lucky there. I didn't have all grandsons. Nothing bad about boys, but it is nice to have a girl sprinkled in there every once in a while. Just my youngest is 3 months old and my oldest grandson is 10. Grandchildren, not children. My children are all adults, so got them all raised and married off. But yeah, I'm super proud of my kids and my grandkids. They're why I do what I do and what I live for. I have a hard time convincing one of my granddaughters that a quilt isn't just a blanket. Well, what's so special about quilts? They're just blankets. And I'm like, oh, honey. So we did take her to the International Quilt Museum and introduced her to a lot of really cool blankets, which now she understands that this is art.
Do they live near you or did they move far away?
My oldest son and his wife were in Salt Lake City, Utah, but then they moved back to Kansas City because they wanted to be closer. And then they just said, forget it, we're going to move to Lincoln. And so, yeah, all my kids are close by.
How fortunate.
Yeah, very. I'm so fortunate.
If you had the opportunity to talk to your great, great, great grandchildren, how would you describe yourself to them?
Oh, wow. I would describe myself as someone who was open-minded and loving and giving and very inviting of new ideas and new places and new people and different types of people and different cultures, and that I would hope that they could embrace that same mindset. Just always be kind. And that's something that I've worked really hard in my life to do and to be, sometimes not so great, other times fantastic. But I think that that is the lesson that I want all of my kids and my grandkids and great grandkids to get, is just be kind. First, be kind. And you don't know what other people are going through. You don't know what other people have been through. So you don't know what that kindness is going to do for them. You don't know what that could possibly do for somebody. It could make their day. It could make their week or their year. You never know. And so that's what I want them to know about me, is that I was a nice person.
Is there anything else that you would want to say to them?
Floss your teeth. My dad, he'll be 92 in August, and he still has all his teeth.
Yeah, they're always coming out with something new to help us do those things we need to do.
I know, but it's a hard habit to get into. I know so many people, they're like, no, I don't floss. Ooh, start now.
Are there crafts and or hobbies that you do?
Oh my gosh. Like I said before, crafts for me were almost like a punishment when I was young because I had to sit still. I went to a Catholic school and I was taught by a lot of nuns, which I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm sure so many women can relate to this. I was always told, sit like a lady, act like a lady. You're not acting like a lady. And I think I was 35 or 36 years old when I was diagnosed with ADD. So that probably had a lot to do with why I didn't like sitting down and doing crafts, because you had to pay too much attention. It was so hard. So I never really engaged in anything like that. But as far as art, I feel like I'm an artistic person in different ways, with words and with music. I love to sing. I love all kinds of music. My husband's in a band, and sometimes we get up and sing my mom, obviously, she was a music teacher. My family is all very musical, but I just am not that kind of sit down and work on something for a really, really long time type of person. And I wonder a lot of times if that might be the key to getting me to putting something like that in front of me and me just making the decision to start and work on it and finish. That's the thing I worry about, is I'm going to have all of these started quilts and blocks and stuff all over my house and I'll never finish them. So.
Or you could be like me. If I get two projects going at a time, then I tend to not even want to go into the sewing room because I have to make decisions on what I'm going to do. So I have to stick to one at a time, else I'd get nothing done.
Yeah, and I do a lot of things. I mean, I'm a busy person, and it's never in a linear fashion. It's like, oh, got to do this, and then I switch gears and go over here and do this, and I switch gears. And that's the one thing I think I'm just afraid that I won't finish. But I guess if I'm afraid of it, it's the best thing to conquer your fears. Do something that you're afraid of. It's not really that I'm afraid of it. I just know how expensive some of that stuff can be. I spent quite a lot of money at QuiltCon on fat quarters for my daughter-in-law. So I could probably spend a lot of money doing this if I decided that I was going to do it.
Well, we spoke just a little bit that you work for American Quilt Study Group now. So how were you introduced to AQSG?
As I said before, I was with the Alzheimer's Association, and I had been looking for an executive director position with a nonprofit for a few months. And I saw the job ad on Indeed, and I was like, American Quilt Study Group, what is that? I didn't even know it was a thing. So I looked into it. I looked at their website, and it just seemed like a really fun job. That seems like a really cool job. When I found out it wasn't like I'm going to be leading a bunch of people in quilting, I don't have to have experience in quilting to do this. They really were looking for someone with experience in nonprofit management. So I did a little bit of research and checked out their website and talked to some people. And I was called for the first interview and really just thought the world of the hiring team, the people who interviewed me. They were so kind and fun to talk to, great feedback and body language. And I just was really impressed with them. So my first interview, and they said that they would be calling me for a second interview. And I was like, okay, now it's go time. I need to start doing some real research. And my second interview, they called me. It was probably 3 weeks after my first one. And so I would sit and watch YouTube videos. First, I started with Quiltside Chats. American Quilt Study Group has a program called Quiltside Chats that they do with Carolyn Ducey at the American International Quilt Museum. And the premise of it is, if you could walk out of the International Quilt Museum with a quilt, if it weren't a crime, which quilt would you walk out with? Which quilt would you take? So I watched a few of those. And then I somehow got on to Mary Fawn's Quilt Nerd. And I started binging Quilt Nerd. My husband would come home and say, you're watching her again? I'm like, she's so smart and so engaging. And so I really learned a lot from her. I learned that it can be fun. It can be funny. There's so many different aspects of quilt research and quilt history. I think what interested me the most about the position was that it had to do with women's history. It has to do with women's voices. And the way that I look at it is, some of these quilts from the 19th century, 20th century, they aren't labeled. We don't know who made them. To me, that's so sad, because somebody put their heart and soul and work into what I consider a piece of art. And we don't know who did it. We don't know what that person was saying. And that's what's so cool about the American Quilt Study Group, is we find out those things. we find out who made that quilt. We find out what that person was thinking, what they were going through. And it takes a lot of time and a lot of hard work. But I've seen some really, really cool research come out of just this piece of fabric or this quilt that had no name on it and nobody knew where it came from. Just seeing some of the quilts that nobody knew where they came from. And then they end up being just this remarkable story and a story that this woman who made it told. Now, I realize that men do make quilts, and I'm sure men have made quilts in the past. But honestly, it was a way for women to tell their stories because quilts tell stories. At the Houston Quilt Festival last year, we had an exhibit, and it was called American Quilt Study Presents Every Quilt Tells a Story. And the quilts that we had in that exhibit all told very interesting and cool stories. And so it was kind of a fluke that I applied for the job, that I got the job. But back to the story of my mom with The Sound of Music. And when I found out that my mom passed away, I was watching The Sound of Music. The night that I found out that I got the position at American Quilt Study Group, when I got the phone call that I got the job, I was watching The Sound of Music. Just kind of a weird how that all ties in. It might just be coincidence, who knows, but I like to think that it's my mom was kind of need this opportunity. And it's been fantastic. I work with the best group of women and men. I've met some pretty incredible people. So I don't regret any of it. It's been wonderful.
How exciting.
I kind of joke at times that there are no quilt emergencies. There really are no quilt emergencies. And I've gotten some looks before, like, are you kidding me? Yes, there are quilt emergencies. But it's just nice to work in an industry that is so creative and so artistic. I mean, the brilliant, brilliant people that I've met, it blows my mind how brilliant some of these people are. There are mathematicians and engineers and people who are very scientific that make some of the most incredible quilts. It's just fascinating to me.
Can you share how AQSG goes about studying these quilts, collecting them?
Yeah, it just depends. Well, and the most important thing that AQSG does for their members is take them through the process. You do not have to be a scholar to research quilts or to study quilts or to be part of American Quilt Study Group. You can just be interested. And I think curiosity is important. You have to be curious about where the quilts came from or whatever it is you're wanting to study, whether it's a block or it's a pattern or it's a person. You just have to have the curiosity and have the initiative to follow through the project. You know, you have your research question and then all the different types of research that you can do. There's a really good video on our website, and it's Mary Kay Waldvogel talking about how she published in Uncoverings. She's published 6 articles in Uncoverings. And the first one was in the 80s. The last one that she published was in 2013. And her process of how she just asked tons of questions of people who were experts in the field and using the library and books and magazines. And one of the things that we do at AQSG is teach people those different steps. We have mentors who will mentor an author or somebody who is interested in doing research through the whole process. We give them information on posters and previews is what we call them. So if they just have a little bit of research done and they're still working, they can do a poster presentation about what their topic is and what they want to research. They have previews where they can bring their research to a lot of people who go to seminar, which is our yearly event that it's in person. But they can ask questions and get feedback from other quilt historians, quilt researchers. like I said, it takes you through the process of writing a really good research paper. Our Uncoverings, which is our scholarly journal, it's like a quilt Bible to a lot of people because they are peer-reviewed articles. They're research-based. Sources are cited. Any topic you can think of that has to do with quilts and quilt-related subjects. So I encourage anybody, if you want to read some really good stuff, to check out our website, and you can purchase an Uncoverings. That's just one of the benefits that we offer. We do all kinds of virtual workshops. We have a winter virtual seminar where people can just share their research and share what they love.
It's great that there's an organization that can all be brought together.
I think so too. And there's a lot of people that say, oh, well, I just like modern quilts, or I like contemporary quilts. You know what? That's awesome. Find an awesome contemporary quilter that you want to do research on, or a contemporary quilt that you're in love with, and do research on that. It doesn't have to be 100 years old or 200 years old. It can be 5 years old. It can be a year old. You ask that question, you come up with that research question and expand on that question. You don't always come up with a conclusion. Sometimes it's like up in the air, but it's the process that's the really cool thing.
And I think you just covered the next question I had, was what type of quilts do you work with?
No quilt is left behind in this organization. Our mission does not say anything about antique quilts or modern quilts or art quilts or vintage or contemporary. It's just quilts and quilt-related studies. We're going to do a virtual series on material culture. And it's going to be really cool because we're going to talk about some different things than quilts and how that all ties in together. Be on the lookout for that. Hopefully we'll have that out before the end of the year.
And I'm going to mention that this is 2024. In case you're listening to it next year.
Maybe not till 2025, but we've got a lot of irons in the fire now. AQSG is moving and grooving. We've had a lot of activity since January 1st. I've been on autopilot, just go, go, go. And it's a good thing. That's a great thing because it means that we're making progress. We're reaching people and we're spreading the word about how wonderful an organization AQSG is, because it just is. It's such a wonderful group of people. And I've heard so many people who have come to seminar or participated in some activity or event that we've done. And I've heard them say, I found my people, or I finally found my people. I hear that a lot in the quilt world, and I love it, because what more can you ask? Is just being able to find the people that you feel comfortable around, that have the same interests and that you have fun with.
That's so cool. Do you happen to have a favorite quilt story that's been researched through AQSG?
I read an article in Blanket Statements. I think I read it maybe my second or third week with AQSG. And it was an article about somebody who was in New York City, I believe, and they saw a woman with a baby wrapped in a quilt, and they recognized some of the characteristics of this quilt. And the woman said, oh my gosh. And so she like approached the woman and said, if I give you $100 and my coat, I believe is what she said, can I have that quilt? The young woman was like, oh, yeah, I hear. And I guess it was kind of dirty and everything. Well, it ended up being a quilt that was made by, I believe her name's Elizabeth Keckley. Is it Elizabeth Keckley, who was Mary Todd Lincoln's seamstress? And Mary Todd Lincoln, after Abe Lincoln was shot and they were no longer in the White House, obviously, because he had been shot, she gave her seamstress all of her material. like her scraps and material. And then she ended up making quilts out of a lot of this material. And that quilt that that woman saw that the baby had wrapped was a quilt that was made by Mary Todd Lincoln, seamstress. Very cool.
Wow.
I'm sure her name's Elizabeth Keckley. I did a little bit of research on that afterwards because I was like, that is such a cool story. It's K-E-C-K-L-E-Y. She was an American seamstress, activist, and writer, and she lived in Washington, D.C. She was the personal dressmaker and confidant of Mary Todd Lincoln, and she was an African American.
Wow. Really cool. Well, I usually ask why people continue quilting with everything we have to do. We can pretty much choose what we want to do, especially the freedoms that we have. So why do you continue to work at AQSG since you really have the opportunity if you wanted to do any other job that you would look for?
Well, I can't imagine doing any other job now. It's not like a job to me. It is like no other job I've ever had. I don't get the Sunday butterflies in my stomach and anxiety on Sunday night. I love going to work. I love who I work with. And I think mostly because it's a group of women. And like I said, there are men also that work with us. Right now, it just so happens that everybody on the board is a woman. And they support each other and cheer for each other and are complimentary to each other and lift each other up. And I've been in some work situations where, and I hate to say it, but it was mostly women who they try to bring you down and very competitive and very cutthroat and backbiting. And I've not seen this be the case in any situation that I've been in with the board or with the people, the volunteers that I work with. They're just such a great group of people and very kind and giving of their time. The volunteers that I work with, they love AQSG. They love quilt research. They love quilts. And it shows. That's just something that's very important to them. They love to give back. Yeah, I can't imagine. I tell people I'd do this for free, but don't get any ideas because I like getting paid. But I'm very lucky and very fortunate that I do get paid to do something that is so much fun.
Well, we all know it's fun to be around quilters.
It really is. It really is. Hey, I've found my people. Even if I don't quilt, I've still found my people because they're pretty incredible.
Can you share with us how American Quilter Study Group began?
Yes. It was formed in 1980, but in 1979, Sally Garut, who was a quilt historian, she started talking to her friends and the people that she studied quilts with and that she was close to. And she felt like there's so much to study. There was so much work to be done that they should form an organization and give presentations and write and do research. And it should not be just for academia. It should be for anyone who is curious about quilts, anyone who is interested in studying quilts. And so that was the premise, was that it's for anybody. So the first AQSG seminar was held in Mill Valley, California. So Sally Garut was from California, and AQSG started in California. And they had a seminar. I believe there were like 29 people maybe that came to the seminar. And they decided after that very first seminar, and some of the people on that were Barbara Brackman, Questa Benberry. Let's see, Julie Silber was in there. I don't know if she was there in the beginning, but she was there from a very early time. Mary Kay Waldvogel, Mary Ann Fons. There's some real big names that have been involved with AQSG and support AQSG But they started meeting once a year, and they called it seminar. And in the beginning, I think that they met at convents and university campuses and places that were cheap. And then the membership grew. And I believe by the 90s, like early 90s, they were up to about 600 to 700 members. So then they started having seminar at hotels and started becoming a little bigger of an event. But still, the main focus of our seminar is the paper presentations of the authors who were selected to write in that year's uncoverings. And so the uncoverings is published and printed. We take it to seminar. That's the first time they can get their hands on the uncoverings for that year. And then they can listen to the authors talk about their research and just their journey through researching that particular topic. And so that was what Sally Garut focused on, was the research. And that is what we focus on today.
At QuiltCon, Mary Fawn spoke. And if that was a taste of what it's like at Uncoverings, that would be so cool.
Just as it happens, Mary Fawns is one of the authors in our Uncoverings for 2024. And it hasn't come out yet. It won't come out until seminar. This year, seminar is in Tarrytown, New York, September 3rd through the 9th. We have a couple of tours that we're planning beforehand on Wednesday, the 4th. But Mary will be talking about her research. And if you did get to see, I heard so many people at QuiltCon say, it was so great. Her lecture was so awesome. And it is. She's just engaging and she knows her stuff. She's brilliant. And I love the way that she ties everything in such a nice, neat, cool package. Like you start and it's like a little journey listening to her talk. And then at the end, you're just like, mind blown. She's wonderful. And she's not the only one. There are so many members who are equally as wonderful and brilliant as she is. And you know, her mom is Mary Ann Fawns of Fawns and Porter. She's grown up with it. And I love that she tells the story that her mom would try and get her to go to seminar and wanted her to do quilt study. And she was like, no, she was just more into quilting and the quilts and not studying the quilts. And now she's like, that's it, man. She's hooked. And I'm glad. And she is on our board. She's on the board of directors. She's the membership chair. And she's done a lot of really good work for us.
Obviously, what she puts her mind to, she does well.
She does. She's a pretty fantastic lady.
Is there something specific that American Quilt Study Group is working on right now?
We're always working on stuff, but right now what we're working on is Seminar 2024. Like I said, is in Tarrytown, New York. We have a seminar committee, and anybody who is a member can propose to have seminar in their area. They just have to have a lot of people who will help them. Obviously, the office helps them, but Sharon Waddell is the chair for the 2024 Tarrytown Seminar. Dana Balsamo is the co-chair. There's several people up in that area. Sue Reich is on the committee. I don't know if you've heard of Quilts of Valor, but Sue Reich worked very closely with Quilts of Valor, and she has for many years. And we meet once a month virtually and plan the seminar. And so the seminar will happen in Tarrytown, New York. Next year, in 2025, it will be in Portland, Maine. And then in 2026, it's going to be in Lincoln, and that will be it's on our territory. We're partnering with International Quilt Museum for 2026. We don't have one scheduled for 2027. So if people are interested in having it in their area, they just have to send in a proposal and have some people to help them. The board decides if it's a go or not. But yeah, we have not had anybody for 2027.
is there anything else that you wanted to share?
Look for any new offerings that AQSG has by going to our Facebook page. Just search American Quilt Study Group. And also our website is AmericanQuiltStudyGroup.org. And all of our events and the future events that are happening will be on our website. Also, we have some exciting news. Our uncoverings and blanket statements, we are digitizing all of them. So that should be happening in the near future as well, is that you'll be able to search by keyword. So if you want to do some research on Jean Ray Laurie, or you want to do some research on Indigo Resist, anything like that, you put in that keyword and those articles will come up. So that's pretty exciting.
Wow. That's a lot of work.
It
is. You guys have put in.
Yeah, but it's worth it because we're in the information age. And if it's not out there, an attorney said, if it's not out there, it doesn't exist. And whether or not I believe that or not, I don't know. But if it's not online, we have to stay relevant. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah. Well, also, the link to your website will be on my website. So it will be on aquilterslife.com on your episode page so that we can always find a link to you there.
Great.
Well, Carrie, thank you so much for joining me on A Quilter's Life. It was wonderful to find out more about you and find out more about American Quilt Study Group. And just thanks so much for being on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was really fun.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You can find more stories on aquilterslife.com or subscribe on your favorite podcast player so each episode will be downloaded automatically. Also, I want to hear about you and your wonderful quilts. Please contact me, Paula Chamberlain, through the website to set up an interview. And as always, thanks for listening.